The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Okay. Whoops. I'm hearing myself. Okay. I shouldn't be hearing myself. Hold on one second. Where is it coming from? Never mind. Let's start over. Hi. Welcome to the show. I'm a little discombobulated right now because I'm monitoring MSNBC, where I should just bring up the picture for you, for those watching on the YouTube. We are awaiting Keith Ellison, who is the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, to appear at that podium that was just showing on the screen to announce new charges. In fact, let me bring up this graphic real quickly. Amy Klobuchar, the senior senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar tweeted out a couple of hours ago, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison is increasing the charges against Derek Chauvin to second degree in George Floyd's murder, and also charging the other three officers. This is another important step for justice. And so I really would like to be able to carry Keith Ellison's announcement of that live. So I'm trying to do two things. This is when not having a producer is really sort of a detriment, because I only have two eyes. So anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. It's a busy day. We're waiting for that big news, and that is certainly good news, especially for the millions of people who are protesting, not only here in the United States, but around the world. People protesting to stop the killings of Black men and women. It's insane. So as we're waiting, I'm hesitant to do anything else. We can bring up the audio and hear what's going on here. Maybe. Oh, I think I muted this. And see what's going on. We're hearing MSNBC. We don't need to listen to Brian Williams, but they're standing. The live shot, for those of you just listening to the audio stream, the live shot that we're seeing is at the spot in Minneapolis where George Floyd was killed by those four police officers. And I got to tell you, the people of Minneapolis acted very quickly and turned the area into a shrine of sorts. They painted a couple of really magnificent murals. It was truly heartbreaking last night. After I finished the show, you know, I go out in the living room. I used to indulge in the best escapism after the program each day by watching my DVR'd recording of General Hospital. But they ran out of original episodes, so they're running reruns now, and my DVR is not even recording it anymore. So I'm missing that bit of real-world escapism every day. So I turned on the news yesterday just in time to see the mother of George Floyd's daughter in tears, talking before the microphone, and see this beautiful little 6 or 7 year old girl who my heart just broke for her, and listening to her mother crying and saying she doesn't have a father anymore. You know, he'll never walk her down the aisle. It's heartbreaking. This never should have happened. And again, where there have been outbreaks of violence around the country, and I'll say this again, I don't believe the violence is coming at the hands of the protesters. I think they're agent provocateurs. I think they're, as we've learned, and I'll get to in a little bit, white nationalist groups. And certainly one of them was posing as Antifa and had a Twitter account from which they were tweeting out all kinds of heinous shit that the right happily retweeted and attributed to Antifa, including What's his name? Donald Trump Jr. Well, I'm looking for the for my actual story on this. Okay, so a Twitter account that tweeted a call to violence and claimed to be representing the position of Antifa was in fact created by a known white supremacist group. This, according to Twitter, who removed the account. Now, before it emerged that the account was run by white supremacists, a group called Identify Europa, or maybe it's Europa, but it looks like the U is a V, a white supremacy group, that Donald Trump Jr. Retweeted or posted it on his Instagram account to his 2.8 million followers as an example of how dangerous Antifa is. And then there's a piece in the Daily Beast today. It's actually a story written from The Nation magazine, who had the original reporting, that the FBI has concluded that Antifa was not at all involved in the in any of these protests. That Antifa is not was not involved, despite Donald Trump. And it was the same day that Donald Trump proclaimed that he's gonna designate Antifa as a terrorist organization. Well, you know what? Yeah, go ahead and try. Because first of all, it's not an organization. That's number one. And number two, the FBI concluded that it wasn't Antifa that was doing this. It was these right-wing groups, but of course you'll never have Donald Trump admit to that. All right, so I'm waiting. I'm still waiting. We're waiting for Keith Ellison. We have no time, no idea what time he's supposed to hit the stage. And I know if I start playing something, that's exactly when he's going to come on. But I may do it anyway. You know what? Maybe we'll start the news. But first, I got to show you. There's a sort of a split screen thing going on because while we are... oh, really? Andrea in the YouTube chat room just said there's a leaked audio of Trump reveling in the tear gassing in front of the White House. If someone can point me to that audio, I would love, Andrea, if you've got a link, post it in the YouTube chat room and I can play it, because I'd love to hear that. Oh, yes. But so there's a hearing going on in the Senate Judiciary Committee where Rod Rosenstein has been testifying this morning about, you know, the Mueller investigation. And I this is a time I wish everyone was listening, was watching on YouTube, because I have a graphic to show you. It's actually an image. It's a picture of Senator Lindsey Graham. Miss Lindsey is the chair, don't you know, of the Senate Intelligence Committee, I mean, the Senate Judiciary Committee. And there's Lindsey got a new coif. I guess when the quarantine was sort of lifted, Lindsey went to his hairdresser, and Lindsey got a new do. You ready? All right. I've got to share this with you. So here's a screen grab from C-SPAN. Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Not the best picture of Lindsey, but then again, there isn't any. And he's got a Donald Trump hairdo. Lindsey has dyed his hair blonde. And although he doesn't have the swoopy circular comb over, it's definitely a Donald wannabe hairdo. Somebody tweeted that out and said, now there's an image you can't unsee. Boy, could he be any bigger of a sycophant or a brown noser? I think not. Oh, my God. All right. I got to take that down off the screen. Yes. Environmental Coffee House in the chat room just said Lindsey is really creepy. Yes, he is really creepy. All right. I'll tell you what. While we're waiting for Keith Ellison to step up to the podium, let me share with you some more of the news of the day while we await the Keith Ellison. I'm sorry, I'm so distracted. I don't want to miss this, so I'm trying to keep an eye on two different screens. So, oh, did I close that one out? Shoot. All right. Well, I'm going to try to keep an eye on a screen to let you know when Keith Ellison steps up to it. But in the meantime, let's check out the news, shall we?
Let the news today.
Oh. And you know what? Now I got to bring the audio down. Okay, I got to bring the audio down on the MSNBC feed because, that comes up on the same pot that I bring all my little news clips up on. Okay, so first of all, this just happened. The Associated Press has reported that defense officials are saying that active duty troops brought to the D.C. area in response to the protests are returning to their home bases. Yeah. You know, interesting the way that works, isn't it? Because we had, everybody really talking about the military. We had, I'm so sorry, I'm not usually this discombobulated, but Mark Esper, the defense secretary, did I not pull this clip over here? Mark Esper went on the TV, went before the cameras, and said that he doesn't think that the military is justified in this situation. Here you go. Here's a little bit of what Mark Esper said today.
The option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act. Last night, a story came out based on a background interview I did earlier in the day. It focused on the events last Monday evening in Lafayette Park, and I found it to be inaccurate in parts.
Okay.
So I want to state very clearly for all to hear my account of what happened that Monday afternoon.
Do tell us.
I did know.
Yeah?
That following the president's remarks on Monday evening, that many of us were going to join President Trump and review the damage in Lafayette Park at St. John's Episcopal Church.
Okay.
What I was not aware of was exactly where we were going when we arrived at the church and what the plans were once we got there. It was also my aim and General Milley's to meet with and thank the members of the National Guard who were on duty that evening in the park. It is something the president likes to do as well.
Okay. All right. So that's the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper. And the rumor mill now is saying that he's on shaky ground because he dared to contradict Donald Trump. Oh, my God. Perish the thought. It's unreal. It just everything that's happening is so antithetical to common sense. Thus, the reason for our guest today, which I neglected to tell you, that Harvey J.K. will be here. Harvey J.K., if you're new to the program, has been a longtime regular guest. He is a professor of democracy and justice. What a great course title that is, at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and is the author of a number of books. And I invited Harvey to come on and give us the historical perspective of our moment in time, because we are living through something that, just unprecedented. So hopefully Professor K can put it all into perspective for us. Still waiting for Keith Ellison to appear at the podium. Right now, MSNBC is just showing pictures of a lot of people milling about the scene where George Floyd was killed by those police officers. Has been turned into kind of a memorial with beautiful murals painted and a new, I don't know even what to call it, an art installation drawn on the ground. A lot of people have gotten very, very creative. And this area where Mr. Floyd was killed has been turned into a shrine. There have been no violent episodes there. They've kept it as sort of a very sacred place. And hopefully it remains that way. All right. In other news, we have with curfews in effect for much of the nation, protesters still came out last night and into this morning, but the streets were calmer than they have been in the days since the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police set off protests against police brutality and institutionalized racism. Now, despite New York City's very newly enacted 8 p.m. curfew. Defiant demonstrators still marched through the city last night. The destruction was quelled. There wasn't nearly as much of it. But things did turn ugly last night in Portland, Oregon. After an hours-long peaceful protest that saw what appeared to be thousands of people laying down on a bridge, I guess for almost 9 minutes, to mark the amount of time that George Floyd had that fucking cop's knee on his neck and killed him. They were there for hours. It was nothing but peaceful. And then police did what they did in D.C. on Monday. They shot off tear gas and flashbang grenades. I don't understand why they go there, but, you know, they did. And then thousands descended on Washington, D.C. Yesterday, a much larger number than was out on Monday. And many of them saying that they were stirred to get out and take to the streets after Trump's outrageous rhetoric and efforts to stifle peaceful protests. And meanwhile, you know, I mentioned at the top that the active forces were departing D.C. and going to, going back to their bases. Well, perhaps that's because not one single governor accepted Trump's offer of military assistance to crush the protests. So, you know, Trump made that on this phone call to the governors on Monday, and then, you know, gave the tough talk to the nation from the Rose Garden on Monday. And now, well, news reports say he appears to be privately backing off his threat to deploy troops to the states in order to quell protests over police brutality. I wonder why. Oh, my goodness. White House officials say this week's response to demonstrations across the country indicates that local governments should be able to restore order themselves. What happened to Donald saying, if they don't do it, I'll do it for them? Yeah, I guess someone told him, you can't. You don't have that power. But, okay, all was not quiet last night. I told you in New York City, things were a little better, but there were still some moments of terror and things that shouldn't have happened. For instance, there's video out there, and I'm not showing it because it's very dark, and the Associated Press bleeped it so much that it's impossible to follow what was being said. But a group of New York City police officers surrounded, shoved, and yelled expletives at two journalists from the Associated Press who were covering the protests. And the video is astounding. But again, every curse word was bleeped, so it's every 2 seconds, and I couldn't, you know, it wasn't worth playing it for a year. I wish the Associated Press would realize that many of us are adults and we can handle the F word, and you need to just let it go. Like, you know, it's almost refreshing to watch some of these live shots and hear people saying, you know what, fuck the police, fuck you, you know, shooting the finger. And some of the people, like, you know, Chuck Toad, feel compelled to say, we apologize for the language, we can't avoid it. Well, of course you can't avoid it. It's real life. This is what's happening. Another thing happened. And I think this was on Monday night. It was Tuesday morning. A retired St. Louis police captain was killed by people who broke into a pawn shop after the protests there turned violent. He was 77 years old. His name was David Dorn. He was found dead on the sidewalk in front of this pawn shop at about 2:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. No arrests have been made. The shooting and theft came on a violent night in St. Louis, where four officers were shot. Others were pelted with rocks and fireworks, and 55 businesses were burglarized or damaged. You know, this is not okay. But again, I want to stress what we've been learning, that I don't believe these are the actions of the protesters. You've got the protesters, and then you've got the shit kickers, the shit stirrers, the people who are trying to stir shit up, to create chaos, to do Donald Trump's bidding. because he loves the violence. Despite what he's saying, he thinks that's what's going to get him reelected to the White House. He thinks if those thugs keep it up on the streets, you know, his call for his, I'm the law and order, I'm the law and order president, I'm your law and order president, he said. I'm looking for my, oh, there it is. Thank you. And so apparently that's what propelled Richard Nixon to his second term big victory, was the appearance that he's this great law and order force. Yeah, the biggest crook ever to inhabit the White House until now, of course. By the way, as of this morning, according to the source that I was using when I was writing What's News at about 7 o'clock this morning, more than 9,300 people have been arrested nationally since the protests began. But I just saw another figure a little while ago, and it's over 11,000. So that number is growing almost as quickly as the number of COVID infections, which, by the way, we have not been talking about. But all of these protests are like giant petri dishes all over the country. And I got to tell you, I hate not being out there. David and I go to pretty much every protest that's held in Broward County, Florida. We've gone, and there's usually 2 or 3 or 4 dozen people there. This time, you know, we're both high risk for COVID, and so we're still staying safe at home. We're not going out there. We're not doing this. And it kills me to not be there. But, you know, we need to all do what's right for us. So I will support the protesters however I can. And that's often me screaming, don't fall for the bullshit lies about Antifa or terrorists. It's not true. And again, I should pull up that article from The Nation. Maybe I will while we're waiting, and realize that the FBI, yes, the FBI, part of the Justice Department, said Antifa has not been a factor in any of the violence that has come out of these protests. There are agent provocateurs in there. There are cops who have planted, we've seen videos, cops planting pallets of bricks so they're there for when the looters come by and start smashing windows. So don't believe the bullshit being foisted upon us by, you know, by the administration. Okay, now is the time that we must all push back. All right, you know, I've been holding off on, I've got more news, but we'll get there. I'm going to play a video for you. I wasn't going to play a song parody today because I thought, there's nothing funny right now. There's really nothing funny. However, the Founders Sing are back with another song. They are nothing if not prolific, and they're talented. And this one, well, I think it strikes the right chord. Founders Sing with a little song for number 45.
You put us all through hell, on a free fall down to hell. You know our country's gone to hell. When law and order get distorted every day, now's the time we need somebody to help us find a way. 'Cause now the peace is gone and the buck stops at your door. Now we see you'll always be the poison, not the cure. Hell is when the trust starts breaking down, and a helpless man is held down on the ground. Hell is when his final words come out, saying, please, I can't breathe. Your brain is so deranged in oh so many supremacy with no mask on your face. When your dark whistle blows, we hear it loud and clear. We see your lies with open eyes as you feed on the fear. Hell is when you spread the hate.
numbers every day. You're pouring on the gasoline while cities are in flames. We need a healer now, but you don't have the heart. Dividing our United States and driving us apart. Hell on earth can't end soon enough.
Ah, Founders Sing. They are so, so talented, right? They're just so good. And that video just was posted maybe an hour ago. So again, I wasn't planning to play it, but there it is. Founders Sing, I will post that on the blog today, along with today's podcast at NicoleSandler.com/6-3-20, because today's the 3rd of June. All right, Harvey J.K. is going to join us in a little while. Yes, I will be calling you, Harvey. And tell you that I'm still waiting. The graphic at NBC News or on MSNBC says, in fact, let me try to bring it up for you. I got to bring this back here to get that picture up. Here we go. All right, so the graphic reads, charges against Derek Chauvin elevated to second-degree murder. And there was just another graphic that said, and charges filed against the 3 other police officers. Now, I was hoping to bring you Keith Ellison making the announcement, but at this point, it's sort of anticlimactic, isn't it? Yeah. So let me give you a little brief programming note before we move on and get Harvey J.K. on the line. And that is, I've been threatening for how long to... that the show is moving, the live show is moving to 5 p.m. Eastern. Well, finally got the new equipment. We hooked it up. We tested it yesterday. All seems to be working right. And it looks like we're moving the live show from 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. So the show will be live on Progressive Voices at 5 o'clock Eastern beginning Monday. And beginning Monday, you'll notice I said Monday, not Tuesday, we are moving back to 5 days a week at on Progressive Voices Network. Great. It looks like my internet just went out. It looks like YouTube is going to buffer in a second. Stick with us. It'll come back. So we are moving Monday. We're still going to do music Mondays. And we'll see how it goes. But, you know, fingers crossed that all goes well. And hopefully that means the show will actually come on Progressive Voices at 5 o'clock on Mondays. So we're doing that. All right. Still no Keith Ellison. So I'll tell you what. I am going to get Harvey J.K. on the line. And we'll talk to him. And, you know, we just know what the news is. We know. So I do have an intro for Harvey. So let's do it, shall we?
Well, where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, Harvey.
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
And there he is. Hey, Harvey.
Hey.
How are you? I got to get your actual picture up on the screen because I can only do, there we are. All right, so I'm going to bring in your video because we're so high tech now and I've got this cool new equipment. I just got to wait for the picture to propagate and you'll be joining us. There you are with video and all. There he is, Harvey J.K. live and in color.
I am so excited. Really.
You and me both, it's been too long since we've spoken. And as I was pondering the insanity of this year so far, I was thinking, who could I talk to who could put this like in a historic perspective for us and talk about, you know, any similarities throughout the years? And then I thought, Harvey J.K., let's call Harvey. And because obviously you're not in the classroom right now at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, right?
Right. Absolutely not.
So what is happening? Are you guys going back in the fall? Do you know? Has any guidelines been issued yet?
Well, no guidelines. The The university sent. Do I sound okay to you? By the way, I've got this.
You sound fine. You sound right, perfect okay. On this end.
Okay. So the university sent out a note to the chairs, and the chairs asked the faculty, were there any courses that they absolutely had to offer face to face? Are there courses that they might like to offer face to face? And are there courses that do not require it at all? And my reply was, I'm not going back in face to face until we know better. I mean, I'm of that age where I don't want to mess around and, you know, jeopardize
anything.
Exactly,
right? I was just saying that. I feel guilty that I'm not out in person at any of these protests because we are.
Yeah.
And, there's an echo there. Hold on. I will get rid of the echo. I know what's causing it this time. Bear with us. Maybe that's what you're hearing, Harvey, and the echo will go away in just a moment. I feel bad that I'm not there, but David and I are both in that high risk age mm-hmm. group,
yeah.
and I'm a lung cancer survivor.
And, right, I was thinking about you immediately when they talked about this.
Right. Hold on, YouTube, the echo should be going away. They're all hearing the echo too. So you're right, Harvey.
Okay.
It'll clear up in a second. We're on a little bit of a delay. I haven't left the house except to walk my dog, seriously, for a long time. So, yeah.
Do you get your food delivered? How's it work?
No, my husband and my daughter have gone out. They do the shopping, you know, with the masks and the gloves and every precaution. But they don't let me go. They don't let me go. So
good for them. That's good. Glad to hear that.
So I, you know, aside from a doctor's appointment, I have not been out of the house and to walk the dog. So, you know, we need to. It seems like the minute George Floyd was killed and the focus went there, people stopped talking about the COVID-19, which is still a huge problem. And now with all these mass protests and so many people gathering together, I really fear that it's going to spike again.
Yeah. Here in Wisconsin, it's been a very, very curious situation. So in Michigan, you may recall, there were open carriers who turned out at the Michigan State Capitol.
Oh, yeah.
To protest. And the copycat characters here in down in Madison, well, from around the state, turned out in Madison demanding an opening. And the Republicans, in their infinite wisdom, went to the Supreme Court, which is a conservative-dominated Supreme Court, and had the court find our Democratic governor's isolation requirement,
stay-at-home orders.
Stay-at-home, right. And they overturned his order. So, of course, people are kind of loony. And especially when they've been staying home too long, I think. So there were vast numbers of people who got in their cars at the very first weekend to drive north to resorts and to cottages.
Uh-huh.
And there were traffic jams galore.
Oh,
so I'm wondering what kind of spiking there'll be. I'll also say that here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, we have three major packing plants.
Uh-huh.
I live 2-3 blocks from one of them. And in fact, it was out of the meatpacking plants where the biggest problems occurred. They became hotspots. And of course, it's low paid work because the days of unionized meatpacking are past.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worry. And in fact, I've gone into the store once, you know, masked and all of that.
Yep.
My wife generally is the one who goes in each week, call her more courageous or who knows what. Although I figure if she gets it, I'm going to get it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
And then, once a week, just to break up the monotony of staying in the same, we go out every day for long, long walks. We have some trails nearby. We can do that. I get in my car just to make sure it doesn't, you know, give way to conditions. And I drive around Green Bay, the city.
Wow.
Just to see how things are going.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's surprising to me how many little things are changing. But I don't know when this will be over. If anybody does, if they have any kind of prophetic vision, let me know. I miss my students for most of the semester. I'll miss them in the fall. And I hope to see them again someday. And if not, I'll end up being retired, I suppose.
Oh, God. Well, hopefully it won't come to that. And, you know, but I have a feeling we're not going to be done with COVID-19 until after Donald Trump is out of office, because he doesn't know and isn't willing to do what's necessary.
Right.
To,
yeah, that's the great crime.
Right?
The really
it
great
really
crime
is
the fact that that he's just, whether it's malicious intent, which I'm not, which may well be, or his just utter inadequacy when it comes to serious presidential actions, we have really taken a beating in this country that was utterly unnecessary. And what are we up to? 105, 110,000 deaths. And of course, that Texas lieutenant governor, I'll never forget his remarks about the elderly folks will probably, I'm paraphrasing, are ready to sacrifice themselves for the sake of the stock market and the economy.
Oh, yeah, because we're dispensable, but the economy, we should be willing to sacrifice ourselves for the economy, aren't you, Harvey?
Yeah, well, it's amazing to me, and fortunately, at least one union succeeded in securing it, the airline flight attendants under Sarah Nelson. But it really is amazing to me that that labor has gotten so weak, that, and I belong to a labor union, that we have really failed to address this unemployment situation the way it should have been addressed, and that is to provide monies to companies on the condition that that goes directly into their payrolls and that workers are maintained on payrolls. Because the other fallout to that is, and I'm sure you've discussed it, is the fact that millions of American workers have probably lost their health insurance coverage.
Oh, yes. Millions. I mean, 40 million people lost their jobs, and most Americans get their health insurance through their employers.
Right. Yeah.
Then it, you know, if A plus B equals C, then, you know, it figures that, yes, that many people lost their health insurance and nothing is being done to help them. In fact, the Trump administration is still in court trying to get what's left of the Affordable Care Act overturned. It is just opposite world. So Harvey J.K.
Reminds me, let me just say, we have not spoken since Bernie is no longer a candidate, right?
We have not.
And I can tell you that I was outraged by the end of those Democratic debates, both where there were numerous candidates and when it was head to head. I was outraged with the Democrats for a start. How dare the Democrats, who are heirs to the legacy of FDR, and the legacy of the 60s, Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid, actually have the audacity to go after Bernie for proposing Medicare for All and being able to go on national TV and telling Americans that we can't afford it. It would bankrupt the country. I mean, they ought not to be allowed to be on the same stage with Bernie Sanders claiming to be Democrats. But on the other hand, I also have to say this is the thing I was going on about probably ever since 2015 when you and I would talk weekly, is I could never figure out why Bernie didn't go all out FDR.
Yeah.
And literally sort of wield the legacy of FDR against his primary opponents. Because when they came after him, he should have picked up FDR as a weapon and just smacked them down, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so for those who don't know Harvey J.K., Harvey, as you mentioned, used to do a weekly thing back in the old days when we were doing the two-hour show. And he's been a regular guest since. And he's, as I mentioned earlier, professor of Democracy and Justice at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. He's the author of numerous books, including The Fight for the Four Freedoms, Take Hold of Our History, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, and FDR and Democracy. That came out since we've last spoken.
Just a few weeks ago, in fact. It was a real labor of love. I went through all of FDR's speeches.
Wow.
I selected those that spoke directly, not just to the idea of democracy, but to the practice of democracy and the need for social democracy. Because even though he didn't use the term, he changed the very meaning of liberalism. FDR was our social democratic president. And I went through them, I edited them down. And if anyone gets a chance to pick up a copy or to go to the library and get a copy, I hope you'll like what I've done. I've introduced each one, really trying to explain what was at stake in FDR's mind and why he emphasized the kinds of things he did. So.
Yeah, it's that's what we need now, is this new, you know, is a new New Deal. We need an FDR. And there was a new book out by John Nichols, who was on the program with me last week, where he talks a lot about Henry Wallace. And that's a name that is not celebrated enough. And he was the promise going forward, and the Democratic Party pretty much shut him down and said, nope. Nope, we're not doing that.
Yeah, as John probably told you, I mean, what's interesting is I didn't really spend a great deal of time on Wallace in any of my work. And John and I, just for the record, everyone should know this, John and I have been friends for about 25 years.
You both live in Wisconsin.
We both live in Wisconsin. Right. We are both devotees of Thomas Paine and Franklin Roosevelt. Right. And I used to tell people I knew John when he was a little boy, but he really wasn't. He's not that much younger than I am, even though I think of him in that way, because we began back in the 90s as buddies. But I just finished reading John's book, and I can tell you, if people get a chance, they should read it. It definitely changed my thinking on Henry Wallace. I mean, I had always had a certain skepticism about Wallace. And one of the things that you come away, you know, I'll tell everybody this. A really good historian, at least I hope every other good historian, gets this feeling when they're working in the past, that there are those moments where you just would like to be able to reach in and change it. You know, like as if you had the godly powers, like you could change it just that much so that things would go in the direction that we would have preferred. And when I wrote my Fight for the Four Freedoms book, I had that thought various times. Like, I didn't want FDR dead yet. Another thought I had is when FDR and Wendell Willkie, who was the Republican candidate in 1940, who ended up becoming friends with FDR in 1944, they actually talked about turning the Democratic Party and the progressive remnants of the Republican Party into a new liberal party. And one could almost have imagined that if there had been a three-way conversation, Willkie, Wallace, and FDR, they might have been able to work things out. But anyhow, the more conservative Democrats and white supremacists from the South, they all, you know, they gathered together and persuaded FDR to remove Wallace from the ticket in 44 and insert Harry Truman. And I can tell you that I'm not as antagonistic towards Truman as many people are on the left. The problem with Truman was he was rather hapless. He really did allow forces that you and I would not care for to kind of help him make his decisions. And as a consequence, he blew it with labor. He just blew it over and over again, even though he had the intention of trying to pursue FDR's agenda. But Wallace was really the heir to the FDR legacy. Yeah. And if you get a chance, everyone, pick up my book on the fight for the four freedoms and John's book on Henry Wallace and the fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. Yep. And you will know probably more than you want to. You'll wish that we could have turned back a time a bit and manipulated history a bit.
Yeah. Well, and there are, look, right, I can think of a time in history I'd like to manipulate a little bit right now. And so let's talk about that, Harvey. So, you know, we're looking at unemployment numbers. When the numbers will come out for May on Friday. And we're already looking at 40 million people. The job numbers on Friday are going to be really, really ugly. And some say unemployment could be at 20, 25%. These are numbers not seen since the Great Depression. Obviously, we don't have a president in the FDR universe. Right. And you can't fault him for what caused the job losses, but we can fault him for how he's handled them or hasn't handled them. And then on top of that, dealing with the civil unrest. Have we ever, Harvey K., have we ever had a time in history where things are as fucked up as they are now? To use the technical term.
Yeah. Well, let's we won't talk about the 19th century because we would not want to be there in the 1850s as the reactionary Southern senators and utterly reactionary Supreme Court made life for African Americans all the more terrible. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's not go there for the moment and talk about the Civil War. Okay. But if we go back to the Herbert Hoover administration. Right. And I want to make it clear, Hoover is not as bad as a personal figure as Donald Trump is. I mean, Donald Trump is a despicable human being, period.
Yep.
But it is the case that in the course of when the Great Depression struck 1929, and by the way, things were not great before 29 either for most working people, but 29, 30, 31, 32, Hoover had serious reservations about using the powers of the federal government to intervene in the economy. In fact, at one point, he actually said, I think it was in the 1928 campaign when he was running for president, this is Herbert Hoover, the Republican, that Americans were on the verge of bringing an end to fear of want and fear, which, of course, later FDR turned into a goal of freedom from want and fear. So what happens is that we see people going to dumps looking for food. We see people who are marching in the streets as unemployed workers confronting police forces who were prepared to fire on them. Look, in Detroit, well, you know, in the auto industry, when workers were marching on the Ford plant, thugs, police, and others came out and shot. Okay, I mean, we saw these kinds of things. But one would have hoped that in the course of, what would that be now, 80, 90 years, okay, that we would have transcended just those kinds of things. But we have such, by the way, we talk about Trump. The Republican Party is so reactionary. We have not seen a reactionary party like this probably since the days of Southern segregation in the South. Okay, that's the kind of party that we see here in D.C. dominating the Senate. So, Kate, with that in mind, I'm not the kind of person who says, you know, you vote blue no matter who. But it is the case. It is imperative not to waste your vote, okay, to make sure you vote in most effectively to get rid of the Republicans from the Senate and more of them from the House. And
exactly.
Decidedly from the White House.
And look, Harvey, you and I have talked for, look, you were a big Bernie Sanders supporter, as was I. We
right.
know, you know, how the nation could best move forward. How we got to this place is a subject for another day. I tweeted something out the other day, and I got a lot of grief for it, but I said something like, as awful as Joe Biden is, and he is, you got to vote against Donald Trump. You have no choice. We need to get rid of the worst president in American history. Well, because I said Biden is awful, of course, you know, I'm a Karen, so people came after me, but, you know, whatever, that's fine. I'm nothing if not honest, and I do think Biden is horrible. He's a horrible candidate. He's the worst candidate we could have put forward, just as Hillary Clinton was the worst candidate the Democrats could have put forward 4 years ago. The Democrats, again, they know how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory every single time. But we can't let them lose this time because there's too much at stake here. The prospect of
right.
Donald Trump winning re-election is terrifying.
Yeah, I wrote a piece because I felt I had to. This is several weeks ago. And I won't read the whole thing here another time. By the way, I'll come back more regularly now.
Oh, because you're home.
You have this,
yeah.
Not just because you have this great technology, but because the situation is it's imperative that we
yes.
address it. But I wrote this several weeks ago. I said, this is serious, very serious. A pandemic without a plan, a fascistic president, gross inequalities of power and wealth, America's revolutionary promise denied, and immortal jeopardy. And I said, I can only answer for myself. People who live in deeply blue states can do what they want. I mean, sure, Californians and New Yorkers love to scorn the rest of us who confront a situation which demands that we do things like hold our nose tightly and vote for someone who we wouldn't otherwise vote for.
Yes.
But as I said in that thing, I said, look, Biden's record is deplorable on any number of issues. But Trump is utterly despicable.
On okay. every issue. I can't
yeah.
name an issue where he's good. I can't say, yeah, he
right.
did the right thing there. I just can't.
So, yeah, I said, so look, as a citizen, as a father, and now as a grandfather, I have no alternative but to vote for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I support direct action. I didn't realize the direct action would be so direct, as we've now been seeing. This is before this kind of activity necessarily occurred in the wake of the killing in Minnesota. But it is the case that, look, I'm in a state that can go either way in a presidential election.
That's right.
And in 2016, when the Democrats should have won and put up such an abysmal candidate that they did, Trump won Pennsylvania, Michigan, and my state of Wisconsin.
Yep.
And even if my own vote doesn't matter much, I hope my voice does. And I would like to believe that my fellow Wisconsinites are prepared to dump Trump as quickly as possible. And so direct action is important. Criticizing Biden is important. Look, these task forces, I'd love to come back and talk about all
yeah.
this, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
These
we'll
task forces are admittedly possibly going to turn out to be window dressing, but I don't think so. And I have personal reason to think otherwise, and we can talk about that some other time. But it is the case that the task forces may well come out with proposals. And I'm not looking for proposals to go merely into a platform. We know candidates can promise to support a platform and then turn their backs on it if they win election. I want it that Joe Biden comes out in public and embraces things that I hope will be in that platform, as close, for example, as possible to Medicare for all.
Yeah.
Okay. That to me is the fundamental. And by the way, I have a really good healthcare plan, even into retirement, having taught for 40 years in Wisconsin. But it is the case that I would gladly move into Medicare for All, as if all of my fellow citizens could as well.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm dying for it. I mean, almost literally. You know, again, as a 2-3 time cancer survivor, technically, if not for, well, now the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't be able to purchase insurance. But, you know, it's prohibitively expensive. There's no affordable in the Affordable Care Act, but we've debated that a million times. So here we are in this place in history, right?
Yeah.
I hate to sound doom and gloom.
You had asked about the historical.
Yeah.
So there was 1931 and 1932, and the events that really came to mind, and especially now that we've seen the protests outside the White House and the vicious attacks that took place on the peaceful protesters. Uh-huh. I recall the bonus marchers of 1932, the veterans of World War One, so many millions of whom were out unemployed by 1932 in the Great Depression, demanded en masse that they be given the bonus that they were promised to be given in 1945 for having served as in World War One. And they came from all over the United States by whatever conveyance they could, and they encamped in the thousands and tens of thousands in Washington, D.C., demanding that Congress give them that bonus. And they were there for some time, and then Hoover ordered troops to surround the encampments.
Wow.
And the head of the troop, the leader of the regiment that surrounded them was, of all people, Douglas MacArthur.
Oh, God.
And his lieutenants were Eisenhower and Patton. And this is clearly MacArthur's doing. He ordered an assault on these encampments. By the way, these encampments were integrated racially, black and white, which the Army itself had not been.
Wow.
There were
families that accompanied these veterans.
There were not a lot of people killed, but we don't actually know the exact amount because of the melee. But there were many who were wounded, and it was the case that they had to literally disperse and flee. And the fact is that that was a telling moment that the federal government was willing to use force when headed by a Republican, used federal troops to attack veterans themselves.
Wow.
In Washington, D.C. So we have seen this before. And fortunately, we did not see deaths this week in Washington. But the videos
horrible.
That came out.
Oh, my God.
The one in particular that was most horrifying was the police attack on the Australian journalists.
Yes, in Australia.
I mean, that was brutal.
Yeah.
And the police were lucky, and the people who suffered that attack were lucky that one of them was not killed, given what they did to them.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what? I didn't have time to get to them, but I've got like 3 videos queued up and ready to go of just police attacking people for no reason. There was one where there was a standoff, protesters on one side and cops behind their shields on the other side. And one guy was, I would say, taunting them, but he was saying, "I love you guys. Come be with us. March with us. Love us. We love you. We're all in this together." And he kept going. The biggest, baddest cop emerged from the line across the way, walked over, arrested the guy. Arrested him for saying, "Be with us. Let's be together. This is insane. We don't have to do this." They arrested him.
It's
just insane.
Yeah. You know, I was doing some commentary, sort of after the fact commentary for Australian TV during the primary season. And if I were going on now, I don't know how much this would come across. I would apologize to the Australians. I would beg their forgiveness for what our president and his armed guards are pulling and doing to their folks.
Yeah. Well, we owe the world an apology, and I do it. You know, I've been doing this thing where I call people around the world, quarantine calling. I'm checking in on people in all corners of the world. And I feel compelled to apologize to them for the idiot that we have in the White House. I apologize to the rest of the world. I know, you know, I've got, gained a couple of listeners from it around the world who are happy that they found somebody who speaks out, because they don't hear our viewpoints in the rest of the world. They hear the Trump line. And sadly, a lot of people think that we're all in with him. We are most certainly not.
That's a tragedy itself if they do. Jeez.
Oh, I know it. I know it. So where do we go from here? I mean, do you have any confidence based on history that we're going to pull out of this thing okay?
Well, here's some thoughts. So I can tell you, and I'm honored that people think of me in a very upbeat way. People from all over the country have been sending me emails and direct messages and everything else saying, give us hope. You know, you're the optimistic one always. You're the one who talked about Americans are radicals at heart.
Yes.
And I say to them, well, look, I mean, this is the worst circumstances imaginable, but it is also the case. Look at the crowd. Look at the protesters. This is not an all-white or all-black set of marches.
Oh, no.
These are integrated young people, okay? These are folks who are turning out, and this is a protest decidedly against police murders and brutalities. But it's more than that. These are people who are calling upon their fellow citizens to help them change the future of America. Mm-hmm. Because and by the way, I mean, I want people to understand this is not – I don't want to lessen at all the tragedy that took place in Minnesota, but the people are out on the streets are not only out on the streets because of that alone, because that moment of terror and murder was indicative of what a force of reactionaries and corporate powers that be are willing to do to their fellow Americans, and have been doing it in a maybe seemingly less brutal way for 45 years. Mm-hmm. They have looted companies from Wall Street. They have driven workers to the point of mental breakdowns and physical breakdowns in places like Amazon, you know, I want to call them sweatshops, the Amazon warehouse. Yep. I mean, it is the case for 45 years, we have seen class war from above, and those who are people of color have suffered it beyond others, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right.
So having said that, though, we see folks are acting. They are. The question is, and this is where nothing is automatic, is whether or not the Democrats, or at least Joe Biden, will come to realize, maybe pressured by Bernie, who may come out of his shell, so to speak, lately, or by AOC or by labor, to actually start articulating the anger and the frustration, but also the possibilities. And I will give him credit for one thing. Biden's speech this week in the morning
was good, right?
It was good. I mean, it's still not on a par with anything I'd expect from my FDR.
Right.
But he has moved, if only in inches. And the point is, if you have a chance to in any way speak up, speak out, keep pushing him, okay? Keep pushing him. If he wants to make history, and I believe one thing Biden wants to do is make history, make him realize making history means moving in a progressive social democratic direction.
Absolutely. You know, we've only got like a minute left. But Harvey, I got to ask, if you know, with all this going on, why is the stock market still surging? It's up over 500 points right now. What the hell?
Well, I keep wondering that myself. And one thought I have is this, that so much of the stock market depends not terribly much on what we do, almost.
Right.
So much as basically everything is financialization. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it may well be that those who own stocks are figuring, stay in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ride
and
up.
just think of this, workers will be so desperate to get jobs later, they might take any kind of shit that's offered to them.
No, you're right.
That's my fear. That this is an investment in an even more exploitative capitalism, and we cannot allow that to happen.
Exactly. And big business, big corporations, they're fine with this. They're fine with exploiting their workers and having them and going to automation. I think it's good for their business, which is a frightening thought. On that note, Harvey J.K., you will have to come back in the very near future.
Don't hesitate to ask.
You got it. I will. We'll talk to you soon then.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. You can find Harvey on the Twitters at HarveyJK. And don't forget all those books. And while you're stuck at home looking for something to do and to read, perhaps check out one of Harvey's books. I will put links on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. And with that, we come to the end of another hour. We'll be back tomorrow. It's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. And yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe. And I still don't think Keith Ellison ever made it to the microphone. So we'll hear what he had to say tomorrow.